What is up? What is going on, everybody? This week, I'm just going to do my best not to get emotional while we record, and I'll try it on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Threequel. As always, I'm here with my two co-hosts, Brad Miller.
What's up?
And Mike Duranik.
How's it going, man?
It's going good. I watched this week's movie about 48 hours ago, so I've had that time to kind of recover emotionally, and now we're just going to get right back into it, so we'll see how we do. This week we labeled it a group pick. Spoiler alert, my two co-hosts haven't seen it, so it was more Ethan's second pick, but I asked these guys to trust me that I would pick something of quality.
And then since that time, he has told us he cheats on this game, so we trust him less now.
Well, but in fairness, Brad was going to trust anything that you were going to offer up that got him out of having to watch The Greatest Showman.
That is true. That was the other option. It was either this or The Greatest Showman.
He's like, yeah, let's do The Impossible.
And I think fair is fair. What we decided was Greatest Showman, it would just be Mike and I talking about which song is actually our favorite from the soundtrack. Whereas this probably drives a little more conversation, and I think that will ring true here. But let's get into it. So usually I ask you guys, how did you come to see this movie the first time? Where's that at? This is a new experience for the two of you. So I'll ask the different version of the question, and that is, what did you know about this movie, if anything at all? Had you heard of it? Had you seen anything about it at all besides me just mentioning it a couple times? Did you bring anything into this first initial viewing of The Impossible?
I knew it was about the tsunami, and I knew that a family got separated, but that was about it.
I came in with far less than that. I knew that the name was The Impossible because that's what you told me, but I actually had to look back at the text a couple of times because I kept on trying to think it was like The Incredible, but it kept on giving me The Incredibles, and turns out very different movie than the Disney cartoon. What? So yeah, I brought nothing into it.
Well, credit where it's due, because I came down, I had a couple options that we were trying to come up with to replace The Greatest Showman, and my girlfriend, Tess, shout out, said, you have to pick The Impossible, and if you don't, that means you hate me. So I was kind of handcuffed a little bit. I kind of didn't really have a choice, but this is where we went. Interested to see why she was so quick to defend this film and put me through this pain again, but here we are. I have seen this movie before. This is the second time I've seen it. The first time I've seen it that I saw it was shortly after a breakup, so I was already emotionally unstable going into watching this movie. I had heard about it because the director, as we'll get into, J.A. Bayona, ended up directing the second Jurassic World film, so he was going to get that, and people had talked about, well, the reason he's here is because of this movie's great. It was on Netflix at the time, so I decided I'd give it a try. Had no clue what it was about, and now here we are. So before we get too far into what your guys' initial thoughts were on the film and where I'm at now seeing it a second time, let's play the Rotten Tomatoes game. It's going to be back to, it's Mike versus Brad, so my cheating has nothing to do with this. It's just back to the two original guys that cheated on this game, just not as openly. Mike, you're the defending champion. You're in the hot seat. Where do you think The Impossible is sitting on the tomato meter?
I've got no earthly clue, so I am just going to throw out 'Ethan, you cheated. Could you, like, you're supposed to, like,
oh, sorry.
You're supposed to, like, tap the table a certain number of times. I'm going to throw out a 90 and let you decide if it's an over or an under on the 90, because I feel like this is the kind of movie that gets well-reviewed.
Well, that is much higher than I expected. I was thinking you were going to say somewhere around 80, and that would have been more difficult, so I'm going to go under at 89.
I hope that we're all going to agree when I ask the next question of where is Rotten Tomatoes right or wrong, but we will see. Brad has one, so we've just traded this whole month. The critics have this at an 81. Audience at an 84. So that's where I think at 60 you're fresh. At 80 you are certified fresh. So they get that extra stamp. It is up into that 80 range. But, I mean, again, you're comparing apples to oranges, but Avatar was an 82. Let's remember that. But I'll ask you guys the question now that you have seen this movie once. Is Rotten Tomatoes correct? at an 81%. Is Rotten Tomatoes correct?
I think probably.
Yeah. I don't have a whole lot. I mean, yeah. I mean, to me, this is one of those movies that, like, again, I don't know how good it is or how bad it is. It was entertaining. It was enthralling. I was, you know, captivated by what I was seeing, but it's not probably good enough that, like, I'm going to go back and watch it. I'll probably never see it again unless, like, someone I'm with says I want to see it. And, oh, yeah, sure, I'll sit and watch it. So, to me, it was good. It was a fun watch. Mm-hmm. Probably won't see it again because it wasn't that appealing to me.
Yeah, I would agree with pretty much everything that Brad just said. I'm surprised that it's in that range because it feels like the type of movie that maybe, based off of the other 99 or 98 movies that we've done, that tends to be higher than I think. So, yeah, I think that it's probably right around right. I do think the interesting thing this month, this is the fourth movie this month. We came out of a month where I feel like in the month of November, everything was in, like, the 90s.
Yep.
And now in this month, you have Avatar as an 82 is the highest that we've done so far. This is an 80, a 72, and then a 62, I think, with Blood Diamond. Yep. And I don't know that – I mean, I think the November movies were a little better, but I don't know that they were that much better than these.
So it's a tough balance for me because, like, if I'm looking at this movie fully critically, like, I'm taking out anything that I feel about this movie. And, Brad, you've said that you see a theme this month of some repetitiveness and things that drag on a little bit. I think that this movie does fall off when we cut back to Ewan McGregor. Like, I think this movie is peaking when we're focused on Naomi Watts and baby Tom Holland. Right, like that's where this is, like, if this movie stayed at that level, it's darn near a best picture contender for me at the Oscars, right? Because that stuff is amazing. I think it dips a little bit for whatever reason, I don't even know. So that's where I would say, like, yeah, it's probably a B-minus movie. But I mean, I can't help, I cry for probably 80% of this movie. I can't help it. This movie tears me apart. I cannot stand, and I mean, this goes into the Marvel movies, right? If Tom Holland cries, I cry. That's why he's a great Spider-Man. I can't help it. Every time Tom Holland has cried in a Marvel movie, I break down. That's how it happens. I cannot handle seeing these families torn apart and him helping them get back together. Not just the main family, which is also heartbreaking, but him going around and helping the other people find their families and that little boy that they find. Like, I literally cannot handle this movie. Like, Brad, you said you'd probably never watch it again. I almost regretted suggesting that we watch it as soon as I hit play and remembered what I was about to put myself through. I can't handle it. Now, that being said, I think that's what they're going for, and they succeed with me, so I think I would have to put this movie up near, like, a 90, because they're doing what they're setting out to do. They're emotionally attaching me to these families, and obviously they're succeeding because I can't control myself. So it's a weird balance of, like, yes, I see the flaws in this movie of where it does kind of dip off and probably does get a little repetitive because, again, you've proven the point. He's helping these people. Maybe we don't need to see the fifth, sixth family that he helps.
Mm.
But it succeeds in what it's trying to do because I'm torn apart when I watch it. I think the most impressive thing that this movie does do is make you feel the horror of the situation, because it doesn't stop. I mean, the tsunami probably hits at, like, the 10-minute mark, maybe. I don't even know if it makes it that long. And then you're just stuck in pain for the next hour. Like, it is... I'm not sure how they felt. I mean, obviously, they didn't... I mean, I don't know if they were in a pool and they, like, layered in. I don't know how they filmed all that stuff. But, I mean, you feel terror in that opening scene. Like, it's horrifying. I was surprised. I double-checked it. This movie's PG-13. I have no idea how they kept this thing at PG-13. This is one of the most horrifying movies we've watched. Her injuries are disgusting. She's naked at two different parts of it, which I get. Like, it's not in a sexual way, but she's naked. And, like, I just... It is violent. And it is... this is a tough watch, which, again, I think is the point. But so I don't know where you guys are at. I think the crowning achievement of this movie is the emotion that it draws out, because you feel like you are there. You feel the dread that these people feel. And I don't know where you guys are that on at, but I really think they did a great job of the horror of this situation.
Yeah. So I don't know where So this movie connects with me in a lot of ways and then doesn't connect. And I can tell that something was missing when I did not get emotional when they reconnected. Okay. I was rooting for it. I was like, you know, when they were passing each other in the hospital and the dad was going different ways, like, I was like, oh, you know, I was rooting for him. Like, oh, just turn around, go back. But when you see the him hugging his boys and then they go and see their mom, like, I wasn't trying to not cry, but, like, I didn't. So clearly to me there was something missing. And I think part of it goes to they chose, in a way, to put themselves in this. Like, I imagine that if you're traveling to Thailand at this time of year, like, you have to know it's tsunami season.
I mean, if I remember the actual event, I think the reason it was so devastating is because this came out of nowhere. Because this was a real, this is the true story. Like, this family was actually in it. And if I remember right, because it was in the early 2000s, right?
Yeah, well, I remember it was around the holiday time, but I don't think there is such a thing as tsunami season. This was an underwater earthquake that led to the tsunami.
Okay.
I could be entirely wrong on that, but it's not like hurricane season or cyclone season on the Pacific. And so what made it so devastating is that there was no early warning.
Okay. Well, then that's just my, ignorance to the situation, I guess. But I'm watching that thinking, like, why did these people vacation here at this time? And they're affluent. They're, they're traveling down there. So to me, when I'm watching it, and that was part of the disconnect, is like, well, crap, these people went and, you know, traveled at a time that was dangerous. And they went through this. And, like, so again, that's my ignorance coming out there of how the tsunami happened or how there's no warning or whatever. But and then throughout the thing, like, yeah, I mean, it was graphic, it was nasty, it was difficult to watch, it was I don't know if I felt the repetitiveness in this one like I did the other ones, but, like, I guess at some point you've got to hit home as the director of, like, just how devastating the tsunami was, but also realize that people watching it don't need to see the devastation over and over and over and over again. You know, like, when they did that flashback when she's in the hospital and she sees herself reliving what she went through, it's like, I don't need to see this again, you know? Like, so there were just a few things that didn't connect with me, but I'm glad I watched it. It's one that, to see what this family goes through and to see the perseverance and the dedication to getting back together and reconnecting was just amazing. And I think your point, Ethan, of where it falls off with you and McGregor, it's like, yeah, in some ways he was, like, far better off through this whole thing. He had a community of people, he had a safe place to live. Obviously, you know, he was separated from his wife and his other child, but he had two of his kids with him, like, and so I guess I had a hard time too, like, his experience was not that of what his wife was experiencing, and so I had a harder time connecting with him and his situation than the other side. So you're right, I think that took away a little bit from the entire picture, but that's just nitpicky. I think it was fine to say it was right at an 80 or 81 is to say it was a good movie. So yeah, that's my rambling take on The Impossible.
So I mean, what we saw on screen, Naomi Watts, I wouldn't say that I am or am not a fan of Naomi Watts. Nothing outside of this where I'm really like, oh, cool, Naomi Watts in a movie. I mean, but this, she did get nominated for lead actress. She went up against, I mean, the big hitters from that year were Jessica Chastain in Zero Dark Thirty, and then Jennifer Lawrence won for Silver Linings Playbook. So I wouldn't say deserved to win, but I think very, very deserved that she got that nod and the nomination. Because, like I said, this movie is at a different level when her and Tom Holland are on screen. And I think the other side of that, too, I had no idea, going back to the first time I watched this, I didn't know that Tom Holland was in this movie. I am now a huge fan of his because I think he's the best Spider-Man we've ever had. And I really love him in those movies. I think he's great at it. And the few other things he's done, his movies haven't had a ton of success outside of Marvel, but there's a Netflix movie that he did, and the name is escaping me. It's a very odd name. It's based on a book, and he is fantastic in it. I think he's a really great actor, and watching him doing this at however old he is in this movie, 10, 11 years old, the dude's got ability, like high level ability. And, you know, we talked about a nomination for Val Kilmer on the last episode and what he went up against. This year, you know, Christoph Waltz won for Django, which we've already talked about. Absolutely. I'm not saying it's at that level. But you're looking at like Alan Arkin and Argo, Robert De Niro and Silver Linings Playbook. Like, I know they don't give out a ton of child nominations because it's just kind of like a weird, like, but my Lord, I think he's fantastic. I think he's, for being a 10-year-old, the horror that he displays, the scenes whenever like Naomi Watts is starting to, like when she's gagging and he's freaking out, like the pain and the fear on his face, the ability in that. I think the first time I saw it, I was like trying to be quiet. For like other people were asleep and I didn't want to like wake people up, so I kept turning it down. I was like, why does the kid keep screaming? This time when I watched it, it's like, of course this kid is screaming. Yeah. He's 10 years old. Look where he's at. Like, look what's happening to him. Like, he gives a really, really good performance. I think he's got a long career. I would be very surprised if by the time Tom Holland retires, he's not at least getting nominations at some point when you have this much level as a 10-year-old, because I think he really carries the movie.
Yeah, I don't disagree. There's something about him that doesn't connect with me, but it's not his ability. Who knows what it is, whatever preconceived bias I have on him as an actor, but killed it in the performance. I have nothing against him and what he did. It just didn't connect with me like some other child actors can and have in the past.
Yeah, I thought he was great. You know, as far as Naomi Watts... just, I mean, prolific in terms of just number of movies.
You scroll through so much stuff.
Her filmography, and she's pumping out 2, 3, 4 movies a year. And so, yeah, I mean, ultimately she's productive, if nothing else. 2 nominations, no wins. But has been in some other good movies along the way, and then also some other not good movies, which is what happens when you're doing as many films as she has been.
Yeah, if it, King Kong is like the one thing that I always thought about with her, the real long, the Peter Jackson one. But yeah, she's been in a ton of stuff, and she's fantastic in this. Behind the camera, like I said, J.A. Bayona, not a ton to talk about. We've talked about something he's involved with, because like I said, he did do Jurassic World, what was it, Fallen Kingdom? Is that the mm-hmm. middle one of this new one? So he got that under his belt. He apparently did direct he directed the first 2 episodes of the Lord of the Rings show that just came out, which I know you watched and I haven't yet.
Yep.
So, I mean, he's been around. He's done stuff. This was, you know, his first, this is what got him famous. He then did a film called A Monster Calls, which is fantastic. If no one's watched it and you've got a little bit of time, that is great, especially the work that we do, what that movie does with like trauma and therapy. Like that is that's a really good movie. Fallen Kingdoms, whatever, he's done that. So, I mean, not a ton to talk about with him either. I'm curious from your guys' take, like, I mean, Brad, you kind of mentioned it, Mike, you didn't give any thoughts on it. Like, is this movie too graphic? Is that, like, I think watching it this time, not too graphic in sense that, like, you can make whatever you want, I don't care, but, like, do you think this movie, nobody has seen this movie? No one saw it in the theaters. People have no idea what this movie is. Obviously, you guys, like you, Mike, you said you thought it was The Incredibles. Brad, you knew it was about a tsunami. Like, I mean, all kidding aside, no one saw this movie. Would it have been more palatable? Because I struggled watching it this time. I forgot how bad it was. Like, when she's throwing up, I don't know what she pulls out of her. Like, it's tough to watch. Like I said, I don't know if I'll ever watch this again. Like... I know Tess has seen it, so it's never going to be to a spot where she's like, hey, I know you guys did this. I'd like to watch it. Like, I would turn around and do that. Like, I don't know if I'll ever watch this movie again. It's really hard for me to get through this.
I don't know. So, as I was doing some reading on it after watching it, I would have a hard time saying that it's too graphic, and here's why, right? So, this movie was trying to accurately, as best it could, portray this tragedy, right? And the experience of a family that went through this tragedy. And from what I read, there was actually backlash against the critics because the critics initially started saying, well, this is, you know, it's too unrealistic, it's too this. And some of the people who survived it said, no, actually, this was kind of like what we experienced. This was true to it. And so I think if your goal in making this movie is to share the story of a family that lived through a tremendous tragedy, a natural disaster, and make it about that survival and what that survival was like, how do you not make that graphic, right? I mean, not every movie is going to be a movie that you're going to want to watch again and again and again. But some movies, if the goal is to make a piece of art that accurately portrays a period of time or an experience, I don't know that you gain a whole lot by pulling too many punches. And this could have gone overboard. I don't think that it did. But I do think it walked towards that line. It was very graphic, but it was graphic in a way that made it realistic. And I think, it was uncomfortable to watch. I don't necessarily want to watch it again, but I'm glad that I watched it because I think it was very well done.
Yeah, I was trying to think how you would film that different and have it still be as memorable as it was. Because you could show the water coming over, and then you could show them after they, you know, were tossed and thrown around under the water and some of that stuff. But the scene that stands out the most to me in the whole thing was some sort of stick to the ribs, I think, you know? And then also when her son sees the back of her leg for the first time, like, I mean, what's the point of doing it if you're not going to show what these people experienced, you know? So I don't think it should or could be less graphic. And as Mike was talking, one of the things that I compare it to is, like, Dave Chappelle's comedy. And what I mean by that is, like, he's going to say things that you're like, why am I sitting here listening to this and supporting this? Like, he will say some of the most outrageous things. He made a joke one time about Michael Jackson, and maybe you need to do the goat sound there, but maybe not. But he makes this joke about that and what he did to these children, and you just get these groans from the crowd. And I'm like, dang, how can I keep watching this? But then I realize, like, this is what I signed up for. I knew when I turned on Dave Chappelle, I was going to hear something that offended me. And if I don't, there's probably something wrong. But that's why he is who he is because he's going to push that. And it's his brand of comedy and that sort of thing. And this is much like that. I'm turning on a movie about what a family went through in a tsunami. And if it were more PG, I don't know that... Why was that film made? You know, because then now it's any other... major movie that they've done that somebody's gone through, but Tsunami was different. That's what makes this film different. You know, I hadn't seen a tsunami as the bad guy in the film. Right. There was no other bad person. Like, I kind of expected that. Like, when those people came and found them and that guy was like, they were carrying her, I was like, crap, what are these people going to do to her? Are they going to rape her? Are they going to kill her? Are they going to, like, you know, torture her in some way? But no, they were good people. But we're so, you know, accustomed to seeing that sort of stuff in a film that, like, I was surprised. So really the only bad person or character or whatever you want to call it was the water and what the water did to these people. So I think it had to be that. And my only other nitpick is, like, I wish I had been a little more connected to the family when it happened. I think they put it in a little bit too early, and I could have used a little bit more connection with this family beforehand, because you didn't feel that, like, oh my God, they're going to be separated, and because you just don't know the characters fully yet. So that was my only nitpick. I wish it had been more devastating to me when they got pulled apart, you know. But overall, good movie.
Yeah, I think kind of piggybacking that, Brad, the emotion that I felt at the end, strangely enough, was not in this situation from the father necessarily seeing his kids as much as it was from the kids seeing each other.
Yeah.
And I think that I love Ian McGregor. I think that more effort into developing his character was what was lacking, because you spent a lot more time with Naomi Watts' character, and so vis-a-vis Tom Holland, there's a lot more development there, and the other two boys are younger, so you have a natural emotional thing. McGregor's journey, I think, is what was lacking to kind of linchpin that all together.
Yeah, and in that thing, that scene that you're referencing when they got back together, I'll tell you, those kids, killed that scene. They won that.
Yeah.
The screaming they did when they saw their brother and the excitement. And they, you know, they didn't even run right away. They sat there and they screamed for him. And, like, you could just see the excitement and the confusion and the, like, all of this. And I'm like, man, these children, where did they learn how to do this? And they killed that scene. And then you get Ewan McGregor, you know, just kind of walking towards them. And, you know, he's showing some emotion and stuff, but nothing like when those brothers saw each other and ran to each other. So I think that the kids definitely killed that scene. I think the hair on my arm stood up a little bit when that happened. And then when you got the culmination of it and I was expecting to be emotional and wasn't, that's when, again, I thought, oh, something here is missing with the character development somehow, because this should be a tear fest right now.
Yeah, that is all fair. Let's do favorite. Is there a favorite line? Like, I don't know if there's really not a ton of dialogue in this movie. Does anything stand out? I honestly can't think of anything off the top of my head that I really like.
I'm gonna go with the screaming that those boys did.
Yeah, like, that was my
favorite line of the film. They yelled his name several times, and yeah, that was pretty great.
Favorite scene then? Best scene maybe? I don't know if favorite. I really loved watching. But yeah, best scene.
I think for me, the one that stands out is the strength that he had as young Spider-Man, helped his mom get up into that tree.
Yeah.
And boosted her, and then had the strength and perseverance and even the stamina. To be able to hold her weight as she, because you know, if her leg's really that bad, like, she's not pulling her weight in any way. He's fully carrying his mother, who she's probably, what, 120, 130 pounds maybe?
And he's
a kid.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of weight for that kid, but he stood there and he did a great job of selling it, and the way he had his hands and holding that weight, like, it was really tough to watch her climb that tree and carry that essentially dead leg up into that. So to me, that's the scene that stood out.
Yeah, if I was going to go with one other than the kids finding each other again, which we've already talked about, I would probably go with the scene where they, Naomi Watts and Tom Holland are out there, and they argue briefly about going to find the little boy who was screaming for help. Because I think, right, like, his response in that young, not quite teenage, like, no, we got to take care of ourselves is a totally normal response. And then her response of kind of flipping it back around to him of, like, wouldn't you want someone to come and find you if you were him? But, yeah, I think that's a well-done scene, and so that's where I would go.
That was going to be mine. I mean, a combination of those two, because that, like, leads into that spot in the tree. But I guess if there is a line, I just remember I don't remember exactly how she says it, but she's explaining, like, that could be one of your brothers. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the way she ends is just, if it's the only thing we do, just kind of the, like, this is obviously just, we're screwed, but if maybe we save someone.
Yep.
And I do think,
well, even when they find, was it Daniel?
And yeah.
Daniel touches her arm, like,
that. That's where I'm gonna start crying. Don't, like, remind me of that.
That scene was really, really well done.
Yep.
But also too, and as I was listening to Mike talk about that scene, like, you could have also flipped that, and I wonder how that would have played out if the mom would have been like, "No, we've got to take care of ourselves," and the son had been like, "No, that could be one of my brothers." And I'm just trying to picture it that way, and because the writer could have gone either direction with that, and I think that's really that's a really neat way to think about that and how those interactions would go.
I think that's also part of the kid's journey, though, right? Is that he doesn't care that his brothers are scared on the flight.
Yep.
He has very little interest, but then through this, he goes from being, you know, a typical 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old boy, however old he was supposed to be, very self-centered and all that, to helping all of these other people reunite, to the joy of rejoining his family. But yeah, I think that's another way that they could have gone, and although with her being a doctor, that probably would have caused some questions about the whole Hippocratic Oath thing and things of that nature.
Fair point. Well, I think that will do it for our conversation of The Impossible. And that just leaves one film left in the month of December, and it is Brad's pick for this month, and that is Catch Me If You Can. So we're going to be talking Leo again, a much younger version. Well, I guess it's not. It's really not that many more years before Blood Diamond, but it feels like it is when you see him on screen. So Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hanks, Steven Spielberg, quite a powerhouse, loaded film. Catch Me If You Can. That'll be next week. But other than that, guys, for Mike, for Brad, I'm Ethan. We'll see you next time.